And they run through our ass like shit through a tin horn, man, and we could not stop them.
It's ridiculous that they do. That was a huge colony. Well, we didn't miss it. You know, the typical rah, 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 zip, boom, bah, boo.
You don't cuss. You don't drink. So what are your vices?
I have been known to chew a bit of tobacco when I get a little tired or watching film.
Hey, I'm Coach O. I just love my Hummer. I have my Hummer. You need a Hummer? Tell them about it, JoJo.
They've won the biggest championship, and that's the championship of life.
Gas control. Everybody just do your job. You understand that?
Welcome into the latest episode of That SEC Podcast. I'm your host, Michael Bratton, a.k.a. SEC Mike, joined as always by my cousin Shane, who goes by Big Orange Vols on Twitter. What are you up to, you big Tennessee homer?
Hey, buddy. Nothing, man. Just sitting here, been twittering it all day long, and you know, just counting down the hours to football time, man.
Yeah, and today
I think we got what, 11 days, and then we're gonna have some football on.
I think so until week zero. But before we get there, I just wanted to let you know it's two milestones today. Today is the 4-year anniversary of the SEC Network, and it's also Tim Tebow's 31st birthday.
So happy birthday.
My question to you, Shane, do you think that Tebow is going to have him some nice, clean intercourse for the first time today?
I don't know about that, man. I thought he was injured.
I was going to go down the rabbit hole, but we should probably not talk about Tebow's sex life. But
well, I think it's a huge, the SEC Network. I mean, think about just 4 years, how much it's done for a lot of these universities that maybe didn't get the airtime they deserved. And I tell you what, man, that was one of the greatest things they've ever put on TV, in my opinion.
Yeah, and I've actually heard arguments, though, that it hurt schools like Tennessee, because prior to that, you know, several of the SEC schools, maybe like your Missouris, maybe even your South Carolinas and the Mississippi schools, you know, those games were not nationally broadcast that often unless those were good teams. And now every game is in the SEC's national. Pretty much every game in the major conferences is national. Do you buy into the talk that networks like that could potentially, you know, you're right, it helps the SEC. I think each school made about $40 million extra just from the SEC. But do you think there's any truth behind it potentially hurting the major programs?
Well, yeah, I do. Just because, like you said, you know, South Carolina just built that new complex over there. And I think that's something that they wouldn't have done if they weren't getting that money coming in, you know. So, and that's big for recruits. You bring them in, you show them that you're growing and you're trying to compete with everybody in the SEC. So I think it does hurt, you know, some of these bigger universities that didn't really have any problem with money. But, you know, again, not too long ago, Tennessee was having a little problem with money, and I guarantee that check from SEC really helped out.
Yeah, and you mentioned South Carolina. They're not the only ones. Missouri, Kentucky, Arkansas, and I believe Ole Miss have all either they're still doing construction that's about to finish up or just, you know, renovating their stadiums and their facilities. So I think it kind of has leveled the playing field, but I think at the end of the day, while it may slightly hurt a big-time program, I think it elevates all of them in the greater good if they just take a step forward together, you know?
For sure. And what the hell's Vanderbilt doing with their money? Are they saving it up for stocks and bonds or something?
Well, you may have missed it, but here in Nashville, that was the talk of the town last week because they were kind of exposed for they're essentially not willing to spend money to help the football program, so That's a contention. They're not willing to renovate the football stadium. So I think Vanderbilt is, for whatever reason, I think they're just happy getting their check and they're just going to continue to be a doormat.
That's crazy. I mean, all that money, they really should get a new stadium there. I don't know how they'll feel it, but maybe if they show some interest in the football team, maybe they'll start competing and doing better. But again, I'm not complaining. In-state rival. So if they want to just sit down there in their high school gym, that's fine.
All right, Shane, let's jump to another out-of-state rival for Tennessee, Georgia. I thought this was kind of the biggest news of today. Defensive back Tyreek McGee, he's reportedly out for 4 to 6 weeks. And that's pretty big for Georgia because this is a guy that he's played in every single game of the Kirby Smart era. He started 2 games last year. He was really starting to come on. I think he had his best game of the season in the Rose Bowl I believe he was second in the team with passes defended last year. So this is a big loss if he's out, particularly if he's out for 6 weeks. Obviously, he's probably going to miss the season opener, which is not a big deal. But week two, Georgia travels to South Carolina. Week four, they travel to Missouri. And those are two teams with two good quarterbacks and some good receivers. So if you're looking at, ahead at the schedule, if he is out for 6 weeks, he would miss both those games. What are your thoughts on McGee's injury?
Yeah, I mean, that's huge because, you know, we know their offense is going to be great. The defense, on the other hand, we don't know what we're going to get. I mean, they were amazing last year, but they lost a lot, you know. So the ones that they did get back on that side that has played in the SEC, you know, those are coveted positions, maybe leaders on the team. You don't know that, but I think this is big. Granted, they probably got about 10 five-star recruits back there to fill in, but it's still, you can't replicate that experience, you know.
Right, and Missouri put up 28 on this team last year, so it'll be interesting to see what they can do at home against potentially a depleted secondary. And I've seen a lot of comments from Georgia fans, next man up. That's kind of the mentality. They do have a lot of guys, if you noted, you know, a lot of touted recruits waiting in the wings. But everyone's calling Georgia the next Alabama, but they've yet to prove that they can consistently replace these guys and just not miss a beat. So I think they're going to have to prove it immediately, and that's facing the fact that Georgia may not have the same pass rush. They're obviously not going to have the same linebacker play early in the season particularly. So I'm not ready to buy into this just not being the next man up and everything's fine. I think, not to say that Georgia's going to lose both those games because of this one guy's out, but mm-hmm. I think this makes it a much more dicier proposition.
Well, two, one thing that does help Georgia this year as opposed to last year, and I'm not talking a huge difference, but in practice, you know, when you're competing against better athletes, which I think they've got better athletes. Now, they may not be ready to go, but they're athletes. They're five stars for a reason. And I think, you know, when you're used to going against your twos, like your offense is going against your defense twos, you know, I don't think it helps the offense as much as it would for a team like Georgia or Alabama that's their twos are ones at other universities. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's why you see when you see injuries at these top dog schools, why they bounce back so quick is because they're competing down there in practice alone. So I don't think they're going to miss too much, but it does suck for them that they got to go against, like you said, Missouri and South Carolina, two of the teams that we know are going to get vertical quick. And, you know, just, I don't know, just see how they jump in. And we'll know probably not week one, but definitely early in that South Carolina game.
All right, Shane, let's stay in the SEC East. Let's go up to Knoxville, where one of my all-time classics, you know, I love this guy, John Adams. He always has a clever way of putting things. He's got a headline in the latest Knoxville News Sentinel. As 0-8 teams go, Tennessee wasn't that bad. What are your thoughts on that one?
Oh, God. What a sad piece of news, you know. I hope nobody bought that damn paper.
Well, I'll tell you what, I think there's some truth to it. I think this is the best 0-8 Tennessee team in Tennessee history. Wouldn't you agree?
Well, it's the only 0-8.
Right, so by definition, that was the best one.
Well, and the worst if you look at it that way. So I'm ready to get last year out of the way. Just forget it. You know, I'm like Pruitt. We're moving on.
More bad news, unfortunately. Jeremy Pruitt.
Are we going to another school or are we still in Tennessee?
No, Jeremy Pruitt, under Tennessee's watch, reported their first NCAA violation recently. And this is a pretty serious one. It's a recruiting violation. Apparently, what did they do? They gave away some tickets to Knox Catholic to an auction.
Now, is this last year or is this year?
This is under Jeremy Pruitt's watch, so it would have to have been this year.
Damn. You think, well,
I was kidding by saying it's a serious. This is a level 3 violation. It's basically, that's what happens when they break a rule that they didn't know was a rule and they reported it immediately. So nothing's going to happen, but it is noteworthy that it's the first one. And I also, you know, I think you got to appreciate the fact that when these things are broken, they're turning in immediately. So at least it's a good look there, you know?
Yeah. I mean, you know, he turned himself in and that kind of sucks, you know, because anybody don't know Catholic, that's where Cade Mays was. And, of course, he spurred us there at the end, and probably why Georgia's got the curse down there, if you ask me. But I think it's kind of funny, you know, because we are going after a few more linemen on that team. So, you know, I don't know how much money they were planning on getting off these tickets, but I'm glad they reported it.
Yeah, and adding a little further insult to that, you mentioned Cade Mays. I hear he's elevated into the starting lineup down there in Georgia already. So,
good for him.
All right, before you start crying, Shane, let's jump down to Tuscaloosa, Alabama. Some interesting stats here. This is one that I was already aware of, but I shared it with you today, Shane. It kind of blew your mind. If Alabama is ranked number one by the AP poll at any time this season, and they'll probably open as number one, so this is not much of a leap of faith here, but if Alabama finds himself ranked number one anytime in AP this year, it'll be the 11th consecutive year Alabama has found themselves in that spot at some point.
That sucks. I mean, unless you're an Alabama fan, you know. I mean, 11 years at some point, and they'll probably be ranked first before the season's up. So you're talking 11 years they have at one point been first in the standings. Is that what you're saying?
In the AP poll, yeah, which is kind of the more respected poll.
Golly, that is crazy. You know, I'm okay with one decade. But now he's cut into two. Yeah. Oh, man. I mean, I got a kid that she's nine, and all her life she knows Alabama has been number one, and 2 years prior. That's crazy.
And, you know, adding a little bit to these stats, this was pointed out by Chris Felica, who's obviously the Bear from the College Game Day. He noted since the 2008 season, which have been Nick Saban's second season, and he's been there 12 years, they've only had six games, Alabama that is, they've only played in six games where they were not in it for the national championship. And that was the 2014 Sugar Bowl against Oklahoma, the final games of the 2010 season, which is the year Auburn won it, and the 2009 Sugar Bowl. So outside of that, every single game they went into, they knew they had a chance. They were still alive for the championship. I mean, how insane is that?
It's insane. We went 0-8 in the SEC last year. They had six games that they weren't going to make the national championship. You know, we had eight games. We weren't going to make a bowl game. So, no, I can't. I mean, good for them. You know, I do think, though, Mike, I'm telling you, as God is my witness, this is like a book, you know. This is a beautiful story, and the book's thicker than I thought it was going to be by, you know, three or four chapters. But I think we're coming to the end. I really do. I really think some other teams are starting to step up in the SEC. I think Bama's going to be starting to take a step down. I think you're going to see more competition, and you know, enjoy it. You know, you had 11 years of this, but I really think we're at the tail end of this thing. So, of course, like I said, I've been saying that for 10 years now. So,
well, my friends, that's what we call a segue, because my buddy Dave Bartu of CFB Matrix, he was on Feinbaum's show today. He was talking about Alabama's new coordinators. Of course, they have a new defensive coordinator because Jeremy Pruitt left. The defensive coordinator is Tosh Lapoy, and they have a new offensive coordinator because the previous coordinator, Brian Daboll, went back to the NFL, and they elevated Mike Locksley to the offensive coordinator position.
So right now with Alabama, with Locksley, you have a D-grade defensive coordinator. With Lapoy, you have a C-grade defensive coordinator. Excuse me, Locksley, you have a D-grade offensive coordinator. Now, the reason that's so important is in the last 15 years, there have been only two cases where a team had an offensive or defensive coordinator going into the season with less than a B grade that won a national title. That was Auburn in 2010 with a C grade defensive coordinator. Okay, but that was Cam Newton year. And then you also have, not surprisingly, Nick Saban with the offensive coordinator from the NFL with no grade. Okay. So, but 13 out of the last 15 years, every national championship team has at least a B-grade coordinator duo or better.
What are your thoughts on those comments?
Yeah, I mean, this was kind of a bizarre offseason, I think, for Alabama. You know, I thought they were going to bring in somebody, you know, somebody that may be struggling. You know, you joked about Hugh Freeze, mm-hmm. something like that. That just seemed like a Saban move to bring somebody that is a trendsetter that can mix things up. And they didn't. They promoted from within. And I think they got lucky when they went from Kirby to Pruitt. But to do that again, I think you're asking a whole lot, you know. I don't know. That's just kind of a lot of red flags went up when I saw them do that.
Yeah, to me, it says that instead of two excellent coaches, he went with two excellent recruiters because he's fearful of what Kirby Smart's doing there in Georgia, had to compete with them, losing in the recruiting rankings to Georgia. Now, I'm sure these guys don't sit around and look at the recruiting rankings very often, but I'm sure they're well aware when they finish behind someone, and that's because Alabama and Georgia are basically going after the same guys, and if you lose enough battles to them, you know you're behind them. So I think that's why these moves were made, purely for recruiting, and it may not catch up with Alabama immediately, but if they get in a tight game with, let's say, a Texas A&M or an LSU or Mississippi State or Auburn or in the SEC championship or the playoff, that's when this is really going to come back to haunt them because they don't have coordinators that know what the hell they're doing in tight situations.
Absolutely. And if you're a Bama fan, don't freak out. He did have them going 12-0. Kind of keep that in your hat. But he did not have them winning the playoffs. So, and I will tell you, I kind of did a little research on this matrix. And I'm not big on matrix, but did you see him make the prediction before the national championship game? It's his pinned tweet. He nailed it. I mean, he predicted the score. Almost. I mean, I think it was 26-23. Mm-hmm. And his came out like 26 point something and 23 point something. It was like perfect. So, you know, I mean, of course, you know, people get lucky. And, you know, but he's been doing this for a long time.
Yeah, this is troubling for me if I'm an Alabama fan.
Yeah, I would be concerned. I'd be concerned about how well Georgia's recruiting and the fact that Nick didn't bring somebody in because he was afraid to lose a recruiter. So, yeah, those are red flags, man. I'm telling you. This may be the year. This may be the final year they're ranked number one.
One other negative on Alabama, I wanted to share this real quick. We don't have a lot of information at this time, but their sophomore running back, Najee Harris, who a lot of people were comparing to Adrian Peterson coming out of high school, didn't play a ton last year. He did see action in a lot of games, but no significant action until he did play in that national championship game and looked great. He's been missing from practice. He was spotted today in a boot on a scooter.
Uh-oh.
Nick Saban's not said anything about this. We don't know how hurt he is, but if that's a serious injury, that could be potentially devastating as well.
Yeah, I mean, they were talking about using him quite a bit this year, so I'm curious to see how long he's out.
All right, Shane, let's stay in the West. Let's go down to Starkville, Mississippi. We're going to talk about some Mississippi State football. I just thought this was particularly interesting. Bob Shoop met with the media recently talking about his, you know, he's been in a situation before taking over a defense that has lost coordinator after coordinator. And for those that don't know, Mississippi State has lost 5 coordinators in a row, all defensive coordinators. So he's the 5th in 5 years, which is,
gee,
that's got to be one of the most amazing stats, not only in the SEC, but in the country. And he was asked about that experience. So I'm going to play this little clip from Bob Shoop.
I've been in situations where I've inherited defenses that didn't have that type of leadership and veteran presence. And you know, it's funny, I was just thinking about that the other day. The one that I did inherit that was very similar to this was my first defense at Penn State in 2014. And it was they encountered a little bit of a same situation in that, you know, you thought of continuity because Coach Paterno had been there so long, and then Bill O'Brien, and then Coach Franklin. So there hadn't been a lot of head coaches. You know, but when I was there, they had in the fourth year, players had 4 different defense. I was their 4th different defensive coordinators. They had Tom Bradley. and then they had Ted Roof, then they had John Butler, and then they had me. So it was sort of that same situation. So those guys could talk the game a little bit, and many of those players who are upperclassmen, you know, were really mature, and you could have those type of discussions with them, and they've gone on to great success at the next level. And maybe it's a good thing, but that defense went on to be the number one defense in the country in run defense, so that's, you know, see what happens.
All right, Shane, so Bob Shoups, he's got experience in this role, you know, replacing guys, and he noted while a lot of people are going to see that as a negative, he kind of sees the benefits from it. What were your thoughts on Bob Shoups' comments?
Yeah, I think he's onto something there. I mean, one of the things is Mississippi State has a great defense. You know, they got a lot of talent coming back. And it's kind of a benefit to having a new coordinator every year coming in as a new coordinator, because these guys are used to learning new playbooks. And, you know, this is – I mean, could you imagine a redshirt senior on that team on the defensive side? This is the fifth playbook he's learned since he's been at Mississippi State. So these guys are used to it, and I think they'll be all right down there on that side, you know, because, like I said, he does got a lot of talent.
Yeah, and I definitely understand why Tennessee fans, you know, kind of are out on Bob Shoup. You know, those defenses were terrible, but, you know, there was a SEC Classic game on the other night I was watching, and it was from the James Franklin era of Vanderbilt, Georgia, when Vanderbilt beat Georgia, and that was a Bob Shoup defense. And, you know, they didn't have any NFL players on that defense, I don't think.
Right.
And they were just outstanding. So, you know, it may have just – we all know how bad Tennessee was. I don't know how much of that had to do with strictly with Bob Shoup. But if he can find that mojo he had at Vanderbilt, this Mississippi State defense could be nasty.
Well, that's the thing, too. How much of that was Butch when he was up here, you know? I don't know if he, you know, hindered him at all. But, again, it's hard to run that hurry-up tempo offense if you're off the field after three plays. I don't care who's the defensive coordinator or what you got, you know, on the defense side of the ball. If you're out there at the entire game, you're gonna blow some plays, you know.
All right, Shane, sticking in the state of Mississippi, Ole Miss. I thought these were some interesting comments. A lot of people out there probably not familiar with this name unless you're an Ole Miss fan, but Scotty Phillips is someone that, you know, people in Oxford were bringing up to me in the spring, so I kind of was doing some research on him. He was a big-time junior college running back, had back-to-back 1,000-yard seasons in junior college. Of course, SEC is a different animal, but this guy enrolled early, competed in the spring, and it sounds like he's turning heads in the fall. Matt Luke here talking about his new running back, Scotty Phillips. We're going to play this quick clip for you.
Good. You know, Scotty hit a big one on Saturday in the scrimmage. You know, there's a really good competition going right there, and they're making each other better. So really like the competition and the physicality they're running with.
All right, so Shane, Matt Luke's pretty high on Scotty Phillips, as are a lot of people that I've talked to down in Mississippi. How big would it be for the Ole Miss offense if they, you know, with all the pieces they have at receiver and quarterback, and they have a really experienced offensive line, how big would it be if this Scotty Phillips, you know, emerges as a big-time running back?
Oh, big time. I think that was the only question mark they really had on that side of the ball. And the fact that they may have found their star, you know. I'll tell you, I wasn't familiar with this guy. And I read your article on it and watched a little bit of his highlights and stuff. And he kind of reminds me of like a poor man's Ray Rice. He's short to the ground. He's stocky. But it seemed like he had good field vision. And he had a tendency to just get vertical. He's one of those that, you know, takes one cut and he's gone north and south, which I always liked. I don't like the flashy sideline to sideline guys.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's real big, because on the opposite side of that field, that defense is going to struggle. And I think that they're going to get in a lot of shootouts. So the fact that they've got all those weapons on offense and now they got a running back that can also catch out of the backfield, I think, that, I mean, if you're an Ole Miss fan, you got to be a little excited about that.
Yeah, and this guy, from what I understand, I think he passed up an opportunity to go to Miami. So he's potential big-time back, and hopefully he lives up to it, because this Ole Miss offense could be something special if he does.
Oh, yeah, they'll be fun to watch.
All right, Shane, another note that I thought was particularly interesting today, the offshore, you know, betting odds have kind of come out for the SEC week one over-under total. So these are numbers that you're betting the combined score of both teams will be either higher or lower, obviously under, over or under. And I'm just going to go in order here. And this is the first one is actually the lowest one of week one, LSU versus Miami. The combined over under is at 45.5. Washington Auburn, it's at 50. Kentucky versus Central Michigan, 50.5. South Carolina and Coastal, 53.5. Vanderbilt MTSU, 54.5. Alabama Louisville, 55.5. Tennessee West Virginia, 60. And Ole Miss Texas Tech, 67. So that's a huge number. Any of those jump out to you? Maybe even that Tennessee West Virginia one at 60.
That's the exact one I was going to pick, and not because I'm a homer. Okay, the reason I'm picking this is Pruitt is going to play slow ball. I mean, he's got a young defense. He's got questions at offense. He's going to want to control the clock. Don't be surprised if they stay in the huddle an extra 5 seconds just to slow this game down, because the last thing you want to do is get in a shootout with Greer and the receivers that they got up there. So to get 60 points, I mean, you're talking about a shootout, and I just don't think we're going to have that week one. I think it's going to be more just grind from Tennessee and trying to play as much, you know, as sound defense as we can.
So sounds like Shane's got Tennessee beating West Virginia 59-0.
I don't know, man. I mean, again, I haven't seen Pruitt. I haven't seen the product we're going to put on the field. But I just, you know, I mean, that's just – he's a defensive guy, you know. It's not going to be – we're not going to be flashy, you know, like we've been in the past. So this is going to be – this is, like, going to be a grind. Hell, we even got a fullback now, so –
Yeah, here's a couple that jump out to me. This is always this. Here's a little gambling tip for those of you that don't, you know, venture into this stuff that much. Anytime you see extremes like LSU and Miami, this is the lowest in the nation at 45.5. You're really safe going over. It's never the extremes. Ole Miss, Texas Tech. Everyone's expecting this huge game with a bunch of fireworks. I would go the under on that one. I always go lower than the high, higher than the low. So if you do that, you're going to be safe more often than not on a lot of these. Now, outside of those two games that I really like here for the over, or excuse me, one for the under, Auburn-Washington at 50. I really like the under there because I think Washington, they have a great defense. I think they match up really well against Auburn. We've kind of touched on, while Auburn has Jarrett Stidham, they're replacing four offensive linemen, all the running backs, kind of the receivers are mostly untested. I don't think there's a chance that Auburn's going to put up anywhere near 30 in this one. And then you go on the reverse side. Auburn's got an outstanding front seven, particularly defensive line, and Washington has question marks on the offensive line. So I don't see Washington putting up very many points in this one either. So I think you're very good going under 50 for that Washington-Auburn game. And then one that I really like for the over is Alabama and Louisville at 55.5. And while Alabama, everyone's enamored with that defense, they're replacing their top six defensive backs. And what do we know about Bobby Petrino? You know, he's an offensive guy that knows how to get quarterbacks going. Those receivers have a lot of confidence. I don't know if you've seen this, but they basically said they have an advantage on every single defensive back on Alabama's roster recently. One of their guys said that. So I think there's a chance there's a bust or two in Alabama secondary in this game, and that'll give Louisville a couple of touchdowns right there. And I think Alabama, their offense, could potentially have their way with Louisville. So I feel pretty confident going over on that 55.5.
Oh, yeah, for sure. And he also enjoys long rides on his Harley Davidson, I heard. That's just a rumor. But you do make some good points. And the thing about the extremes, too, it's week one, you know. I mean, Vegas has got a lot of insight, but they don't know really what they have week one. So that's why I like those polar ends when you're looking at betting for something like this, especially over under on spreads, you know.
Yeah, historically, like you said, the first couple of weeks of the season, the gambler has a very good advantage in college football. These diehard fans that know their teams better than even Vegas. Because there's so, like you said, there's so much turnover in college football. So if you're going to do some gambling, I recommend doing it early and not late.
Yeah.
All right, Shane, I think the last thing we're going to touch on today.
Wait. Before you go into that, I just saw the other day, too, Florida sent an offer to Marvin Harrison Jr. Did you see that?
No.
Yeah. Yesterday, he got his third offer. He's got one from Syracuse. He's got one for Penn State, and now he's got one for Florida. He's a 2021 recruit, and I just saw it, man. And just instantly felt old, you know, because it just seems like yesterday I was using him on my fantasy teams, his dad, you know.
Now you're talking about the former Colt, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
See, you missed an easy joke there. I thought this was where you were going. He got busted for some kind of gun violence. And we all know the Tay Bang frying pan machine gun situation down there in Gainesville right now.
Oh, jeez. Harrison Jr. did?
No, Harrison Sr.
Oh, no, I didn't know that.
So I just assume gun violence translates generationally, but
hopefully not. Hey, hence the scholarship offer. I like it. Well played, Dan.
All right, so what we really want to touch on last, we've got a really good mailbag question. Do you have that queued up there, Shane?
Well, queued up? Kind of. No, I got it right here. This goes from Joshua Barnhart, mailbag question. Who are your favorite all-time players in the SEC? Not the famous ones, like the Peyton Mannings, but the unsung heroes. His favorite was Jacob Hester, the fullback at LSU. He played like his hair was on fire. And I don't know if you remember him that much.
Oh, yeah. I remember him.
It's like he was looking for contact, and I love that, especially with the fullback. He was a beast, but who was, do you have any, you know, unsung heroes, not the famous ones, just, you know, the ones that a lot of people don't know about?
Yeah. And I struggled with this. So, you know, I wanted to go pretty deep, but I just kind of blanked on this, but I do have some favorites. They are maybe a little too known, but I was really high. For those that don't know, I'm a big Green Bay Packers fan. So, this is a little bit of revisionist history, but I do have a cool story with this guy, Chad Clifton. He's the only guy that I know that has a Tennessee National Championship and a Green Bay Packers Super Bowl. So that guy's close to my heart. And when Green Bay won the Super Bowl last in 2010, I was actually in Green Bay. I went up for the 2011 season opener. I wanted to be there for the unveiling of their, you know, latest banner, what have you. And the day before the game, I went to a fan rally, and Chad Clifton was there, and he signed a football and threw it into the crowd, and I caught it. So that just kind of made my day, you know?
I keep thinking of that Joe Green commercial where he throws that jersey.
And that's basically what happened.
That's awesome, man.
But outside of Chad Clifton, I was always a big Randall Cobb fan. He was from the similar area as Shane and I. And I love these guys that are a little bit small, and, you know, the hometown school, I think Tennessee kind of disrespected him in a sense, didn't go after him or didn't, you know, pursue him I think he was a high school quarterback, and they gave him no chance to be a quarterback. Got to go up to Kentucky, played a little quarterback, but finally transitioned to receiver, and the rest is history. I mean, he was an all-timer at Kentucky. Probably my favorite SEC player in recent history was Jordan Matthews. He was just a beast at Vanderbilt, and I think he was basically their only option on offense at times, and the defense knew they were going to go to Jordan Matthews time and again. They could not stop him.
And yeah, he was tough.
One of my favorite plays, I remember it vividly, it was against Ole Miss. Jordan Matthews got knocked in the head. This was like prior to the concussion protocol, because he started vomiting on the field. They had to take him off. He sat out like two plays, and then he came back in and scored like a 50-yard touchdown. And I was like, my God, I mean, he's a machine. There's no stopping him. And my last guy, while he is ridiculously famous, I was on the train well before, and that's Georgia quarterback Matt Stafford. I was actually sleeping on Shane's couch. I was sleeping on Shane's couch. He was living in a bachelor pad with three other losers. And I was the only one up watching. It was this, I don't even know who they were playing. It was Georgia, and Stafford was a true freshman. I saw that dude's arm for the first time, And I told everyone the next day, this is John Elway 2.0, so that's why Shane's making fun of me there. But that just always stuck with me, and I think I obviously proved that I knew what I was talking about.
Yeah, man, he's still going, brother. Hell of a quarterback. Well, mine, you know, like you said, this was a tough question because I really went through a few names and I was like, well, I don't know, maybe he's too famous or whatnot, you know, because I mean, my first reaction was Reggie White, but then I was like, well, hell, everybody knows Reggie.
Mm-hmm.
I went to a book signing and he was there and signed my jersey and everything, you know, I was just a kid, but so I've always, you know, he's always had a special place in my heart. And but as far as not famous, I'm going back to that 1998 team. And one thing about Tennessee is they had some stud, I mean, amazing offensive linemen. And you mentioned one, Chad Clifton, but they had Cozy Coleman, Mercedes Hamilton. You know, they were killer. But the one guy at center was Spencer Riley. And Spencer got hurt in the offseason, and he had surgery done and came back and was able to snap the ball. And but I liked him so much because he came from my high school. And it was just like you said, kind of like a hometown thing. You're always rooting for him and watching him on TV and winning the national championship. That was just – it was awesome. He came to the high school, showed us the ring and everything like that. So, you know, at that time I thought I was going to be playing at Tennessee one day. So it was kind of – you know, it was just kind of cool to see. And but another one on that team, and a lot of people don't remember, was Will Bartholomew. Do you remember him?
Oh, yeah.
I love that guy. I mean, he was sitting out there. He kind of reminded me. This was about the same time that Mike Allstott was killing it in Tampa. And, you know, to see Bartholomew out there, that was like our version of him. Granted, he didn't get a lot of touchdowns or anything like that, but I do remember seeing him in person. We went to the Orange and White game, talked to him a little bit, and it was just, you know, he's just one of those guys. He gave everything he had when he was on that field, and unfortunately, he only got to play, I think, like maybe one game, if that. He got hurt, and so he never got to play in the NFL officially, but you know, it was just one of those guys I just always was rooting for. And, of course, he came back, and I think he opened up some D1, I think it's called D1 workout facilities, and now he's a multimillionaire, so he ain't hurting. But but he was always one of my favorites, you know.
Well, Shane, just us talking about it, man, it just gets me even more fired up that we're so close to football season, you know what?
Oh, man, don't it, though? I mean – we got 11 days. I don't know who the hell's playing in 11 days, but I'll be watching it. And then the 30th, I think SEC kicks off, right?
Yeah, Thursday, August 30th, Texas A&M and Northwestern State. Should be a barn burner.
Well, I'll be up all night watching it. So, yeah, I'm definitely ready for some football. And it's been fun talking about it, but now it's almost time to see it, you know?
All right, Shane. Yeah, let's jump off here before we get going too long. But just want to say thanks for joining me, and thanks everybody out there listening. And if you made it this far, please give us a 5-star heart rating on iTunes. It really helps us out.
Absolutely. I appreciate all the listeners, and it's been fun, man. Go Vols.